With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/decide. That's linkedin.com/decide. Terms and conditions apply.
Anthony Heron.
Who's going to be legit? The guy can play football.
Former NFL defensive lineman Anthony Heron.
It's away from the initial contact, but not the second time. Anthony Heron wrapped him up.
Breaking down the Bears on Fox TV.
Mr. Heron, I want to compliment you. You're doing a fine job.
College football for the Pac-12 Network.
Heron, the best of the bunch right now.
Anthony Heron with Bernstein and McKnight on the score.
We've got an important football game that is going to be played on Sunday, and here to talk about that and more is Anthony Heron on Twitter at Big Ant Heron, Pac-12 Network, NBC Sports, Fox 32, Sirius XM, and here regularly with us, and also part of our post-game broadcast that is it you and Olin Krutz?
That is correct.
Again,
me and Owen.
Yeah. So that's always can't miss radio after a Bears game, and maybe after a Bears game that keeps them alive in what I'm calling the Dan Bernstein playoffs. Because
started them now. Yeah, it makes everybody feel better.
Last week was the play-in, and I've just decided that this is we're probably not gonna have regular playoffs, but as long as the games kind of matter. I'm treating them as playoffs.
Kind of like a trophy game in the Big Ten, something like that.
Sure.
Like, put like Florida Rosedale or the Heartland on the line or something.
Yeah, mid-level bowl game. You get a crappy watch that, you know, like a windbreaker or something like that. So,
Luggage that falls apart as soon as you try and fly out of whatever crappy city you're in.
Sure.
Absolutely.
That's how I'm looking at it. How are you looking at this game?
I'm not discounting. It's certainly far-fetched still, but I'm not discounting the playoff potential yet, and that's certainly the way the Bears in the locker room are viewing it. And I'm wondering, I was bringing this up when I was on with Arthur with Baby Hub the other day on Sunday morning. I'm wondering if we get through the end of this season, and I don't know, Bears probably won't win out. They got the most difficult three-game stretch remaining in the NFL. But even if they win a couple of them, or if they lose a couple of them and still play well, and you see the continuing promise of Mitch Trubisky, you continue to see more consistency or improvement or whichever lens you view that through, you continue to see Matt Nagy calling the game to the strengths of his offense. And if they do that and miss the playoffs because, you know, like we were referencing last week, Dan, there's so many folks who, because of kind of the bravado that they left last season with and came into this season with, there was a lot of championship or bust to this season. If we see an ascendance that kind of goes through these last few weeks, is that ending with promise that's still exciting towards next year?
It also brings us to what Rich Campbell told Mully and Haw that I tried to explore yesterday in the column that I wrote for 670thescore.com. They're admitting they choked. They admitted. They said multiple players, Harry Hiestand, Charles Leno, and other players said that they're playing well now. Because it's free and easy, because there's no worries, they're not playing tight. That tells me that they wilted under the pressure of expectations. So there's a lot of questions. What were you not as good at because of pressure?
Yeah.
What specifically? What didn't translate to the field? What went wrong? What made things more difficult? But it's amazing to me the ease with which they're copping to this self-own of, well, yeah, now we're just playing free and easy. The pressure's off. Well, yeah, because you lost so many games.
Right.
I mean, it's really, it's surprising to me.
I do agree that that's part of it. I think being at home and being booed and the way the players were reacting to it, I think that certainly had a factor. It played into their minds, even though it shouldn't. But aside from that, aside from just the player end of it, you guys know I've been on this familiar refrain throughout the season. I do believe that the coaching staff, specifically Matt Nagy and the offensive coaches, were not putting them in the best positions to succeed early in the season as well. So when you have the pressure of some of the opponents they played early in the season, and we're going to see another one here on Sunday, who do a great job of applying mental pressure to the pocket with the mug look and with other things they do and moving around some of the great free agent pass rushers, the Smith guys that they brought in coming off the edges and condensing that pocket with power, which the Bears haven't seen in a couple of weeks, and bringing power off the edges, which is not the strength of pass protection for Charles Leno or Bobby Massie, certainly not Cornelius Lucas, and just having guys collapse their sternum over and over again and drive them back into the face of the quarterback, not just trying to beat them with finesse. They're going to see that this weekend from Green Bay. And so those things happening early in the season were enhanced by some of the ill-timed play calling and some of the repetitive play calling of Matt Nagy within those games. And so it just enhanced what the Bears felt in both physical and mental pressure from the opponent. I do believe that now they're far more well-equipped to be able to withstand what may come from Green Bay, because now we've seen a consistent version of Matt Nagy, I believe, calling the offense, calling his quarterback, calling his offensive line, as important as anything, into situations where they can play with more aggression and catch the opponent off guard, not formationally, not personnel-wise, not schematically, but just in moving the launch point, in anticipating a pass and getting a run at different times. All those things enhance the way that the physical guys on your team and that your quarterback can do without having to process information so much every snap.
Is power easier to read in an RPO or option scheme if you're looking at a crashing defensive end and waiting for scrape exchange or for Mitch to make that call? Does that give you a better look? Does it change your decision-making point?
It can make the decision more gray, because if you have someone who, you know, just to use Von Miller as an example of one of the best finesse rushers, speed rushers in the league, who is more apt to work up the field and put himself in space and by alignment and by speed, where he's not looking to work into the body of the offensive tackle. So his path takes him wider initially off the play. So if you do have that offensive tackle just disappear and you have that unblocked edge defender, now as the read for the quarterback, it's easier because that defender, just like the defender would want to get that offensive tackle on an island, now that defender himself is on an island as the quarterback is working the mesh point, trying to read the edge of the defense. Now, that defender is not always the person who's being read, and he's not always the last line of defense. That hang defender who's there, whether it may be a safety or a backside linebacker, or sometimes a corner, depending on the formation and the personnel group, but there's usually a hang defender who's in a position as well to react to the play, to react to that mesh point from the backside. Whichever the case may be, that initial portion of the read, it's more gray when you have finesse rushers, speed rushers, rushers in space, as opposed to someone like the Packers tend to bring, where it's more their path takes them into the body of the edge blocker. Thus, they're tighter to the formation with their first step or two in closing things down. So it's not as easy or quicker read for the quarterback, because you don't just see that one individual that you can easily read his shoulders or his hips and what his path is going
to
be.
So let's put the bow on it then, Anthony Herron. The Packers defense has been susceptible to the run. How does Matt Nagy take advantage of that deficiency with his own run game if, God willing, he calls one, unlike in week one?
Well, the answer to me is really that simple, to call the run plays. Now, in addition to that, because we've seen some games this season where he hasn't been willing to do
decide
that consistently.
Decide to run.
Yes.
Ah,
yeah, but,
do it.
Yeah.
Inside information.
Right, let's get inside the X's and O's. Call a run play.
Granular stuff.
But he's been doing it, though. He's been calling runs as of late. And I've been really encouraged. And I think it's lost a little bit because we tend to evaluate just the player end of development and what we're watching from the quarterback and how productive is he and whether or not an offensive line is protecting better and those things. We're seeing Matt Nagy develop as a head coach. We're seeing Matt Nagy develop as a play caller, because he really hadn't done either before he came here to Chicago. And as much as that can be frustrating, and it tests the patience of fans and the organization and whomever else, but he does strike me as a really talented head coach, a talented personality, a talented manager of men, a talented leader, and a talented offensive mind. But to not have done it before, that's been exposed more this season than it was last year. And now, I'd say for about at least a month, like, I think Mitch has been playing really well. Not really well, but Mitch has been playing well since the Chargers game. I think Matt Nagy has been calling the game well for about a month now, and I think we're seeing him developing in his role.
There's another factor, and I'm glad you brought up the stretch that they've been in here the last couple of weeks. There's another factor in this, and I know you've heard this audio, but for those who haven't, I want to play this, and then we're going to talk about it some. Mitch was asked about how the change back to Cody Whitehair at center has affected his confidence, the offense's ability to go fast. Here's Mitch just yesterday.
it just helps with communication and having that leader in the middle, especially with those young guys to the right and to the left of them. Communication has been really good. Our tempo and practice and just our overall sense of urgency. I think it all starts with Cody and just overall how much he cares for this team and how much he cares about this game kind of trickles all through him, and having him back in the middle has helped a lot for us.
So what catches you most there?
Initially, after the very first game where they moved Cody Whitehair to center, and Ola and I were on the post-post show and we were discussing it, and when Mitch was asked about it after that game, I don't even remember exactly who the opponent was off the top of my head, but when he was asked about it after that game, he didn't, which, you know, I found to be somewhat awkward. But a lot of times when you're asked a question like that in what could end up being a controversial move, yeah, where you have this young guy who's drafted high, who in his second year in the NFL has moved from guard to center, and James Daniels was supposed to take over the leadership role. He was supposed to take over the one setting the tempo and being the one making the calls pre-snap and all those things. And so when Mitch was asked about it after that game, he pretty much just went out of his way to wax poetic about Cody Whitehair and really didn't put any sort of disclaimer on it that, but James is awesome too. And I think Mitch believes James is awesome. I just think he believes he's awesome as a guard, not necessarily right now as a center. And that was sort of another example of that. The results have been there, though, even though, and Olin was actually making this point the other night on the radio when he was on with Joe O and Arthur, that neither individual, neither Cody nor James is necessarily playing stellar individual ball. But when it comes down to it, when you have someone who the quarterback can have faith in and who just gets everyone on the same page, Cody has played center at a high level in the NFL before. Snapping aside, the snapping is bad. The blocking tends to be pretty good, and he gets everyone on the same page. Whereas James Daniels, as a young player, has probably just turned 22 or whatever, just a couple years in the league at this point, he doesn't seem to be at a position right now, and especially where you have other guys banged up, you have other inexperienced at guard and now at tackle as well, who are surrounding what could be the center, formerly James Daniels, now Cody Whitehair. It's so important for that spot to be definitive, to be concise, to be the leader, the tempo setter, and for everyone else to have faith that that individual is seeing the game correctly. And when they're not, perhaps to just shrink and say, well, at least we'll all do what he says. Even if we think maybe he's wrong, we're just willing to follow that dude. And that's what Cody Whitehair brings to the table, in addition to being a very talented blocker as well.
We talked a lot about what Mitch's legs do to not only just grab yards that are there, but to activate him, to get him involved in the game and playing at a certain level of arousal, that it just seems to be different from when he's not running. The Packers, even though they're not real good at stopping the run, they don't allow a lot of yards to quarterbacks on the ground. And it may be a function of who they're playing, guys who just don't really want to do it, or does it have to do with the eyes on the quarterback, the amount of zone defense being played, or anything schematic?
The way that they rush the quarterback in Green Bay lends itself to not opening up gaping rushing lanes. I mean, folks I've communicated with up there even this week, they're very aware of, and who's not at this point, I mean, some of us more than others, but in the way that Chicago has adjusted their offense to utilize the legs of Mitch, not just as a runner, but as a passer as well, to move the pocket, to move the launch point, to vary where he's throwing the football from, the rushing style of Green Bay, like I was referencing them being power rushers earlier, when you condense the pocket without necessarily beating a blocker clean, but when you sit the bodies of the offensive lineman back into the lap of the quarterback, it puts him in a very difficult position to what we call, one, when passing, when you have to throw out of a well, when you don't see those open throwing lanes and windows that you can actually visualize the route combinations through, and also as a runner. The scramble is not as available to you as immediately in those scenarios, because it's not just, hey, I'm going to climb the pocket and maybe I'll move to the right, because there's a body in front of you. It's not just, well, let me slide right because I love to slide right, because your offensive tackle will be there. Remember a game this season where Mitch, I'm not even going to try to recall off the top of my head which game it was, but we saw a game where Mitch fumbled the ball simply because Bobby Massey had been bull rushed into him, and the ball became available when he was trying to transition it into a throwing mechanic.
Chargers game, and I think, right?
I think that's
that
right.
That sounds right.
Just
yes.
Before the field
yes,
goal.
Yes, exactly. Because he had the errant pass and he had the fumble there, and everybody said he had a horrible game when he didn't. It was mainly because of two plays where he missed an open receiver for a touchdown and he fumbled the ball in the pocket.
Apart
from that, he actually had a nice game against the Chargers, but that's in the rearview mirror. But in that moment, when you have your own offensive lineman in your lap, it's not as apparent. It's not as obvious as an escape angle when there's power being brought to collapse the pocket, as opposed to some of the finesse rushers that make it easier for an offensive lineman if you can just chase that guy, just sort of ward him off up the field, then you're in a position where that running lane presents itself to you. Thus, you're not really even thinking about where to escape. It's almost like your body just sort of guides you there in a magnetic sort of manner.
All right, so what's the counter then? If that's what they are doing, and linemen do get occasionally shoved back, are we, like, in my mind's eye, I imagine you've got some lateral opportunities there. You've got a crack toss. You've got,
which they've been using more lately.
You have more of an, instead of the inside bubble screen, more of a classic across the field screen opportunity. There are going to be some moments where they could get him in something that they could hit on this. I really like waggles and boots and crack toss against what you're describing.
And that needs to be, and it has become just a more consistent part of the Bears game plan anyway. And yes, when you rush with power, when you condense the pocket by rushing into the body of the offensive lineman, then disengagement is very important, and it can set up where a quarterback, even to the end, to the side of the field where that power rush is coming from, if your drop is deep enough as a quarterback, then you can be in a position where you'll still beat that guy around the corner because he's still engaged. You're bringing force as an edge defender, as a pass rusher, outside linebacker, defensive end. You're bringing force into the body of that tackle. You're initially just focused on driving that guy back. And then when you feel your quarterback depth, that's when you retrace and try to fall off into the pocket. That's when you might snatch that outside shoulder and continue to work up the field to apply pressure by losing that blocker. But at that point, if you're so focused on bringing power into the blocker, an athletic quarterback like Mitch can still get around the edge on you just even from a sheer drop into the pocket. But what the Bears have to do, though, is still call him into movement. Don't just allow Trubisky to have to sit in the pocket and determine when it's time to scramble, determine when it's time to evacuate. You need to, if you're Matt Nagy, continue to say, we'll use some trap protections where we'll draw a puller out there with him and make sure, even if it's not a free defender on the edge, but even someone else who may blitz off the corner where he's got an extra blocker out there or a tight end in a wham block sort of movement like they've been using J.P. Holtz with lately, but get him to the corner in a called manner where it still condenses the clutter that may be there in his head. Just allow him to know in a predetermined manner, I'm moving in this direction, and a quick decision can be made.
Yeah. We'll talk more Bears Packers with Anthony Heron when we come back. There's a little bit more of Mitch that I want us to all hear together. Plus, Akeem Hicks looks slated for a return. Nobody better to talk with about that than Anthony Heron. It's the Bernstein McKnight Show on the Score.
After that first game against the Packers, Tremont Williams said, we wanted to make Trubisky play quarterback. Did you hear that? Was that insulting to you? And whether it was or not, how much does that kind of sentiment about you motivate you?
I mean, I got enough motivation from the outside, and I guess that's even more motivation, but I didn't hear that. I don't really care. I didn't play the way I wanted to the first game. That's fairly obvious. So for him to say something about it, I mean, that's just an obvious statement, I guess. I want to play better, and got a great opportunity to do that this week.
That's Mitch. We haven't called him Forky lately.
Because no.
He's played his way out of that comparison.
But you got to hand it to him. That is a pro way of swatting aside another player, kind of taking a dig at you many weeks ago. Okay, very much taking a dig at you. And then a reporter brings it up, a veteran guy, a guy who's got an angle and understands what he's looking for, understands what he's asking, trying to get something out of you. And he's like, no, I'm good. I'm going to be the professional quarterback now.
The bottom of the hour was brought to you by Northwestern Basketball. Join Northwestern Basketball at the new Welsh Ryan Arena this season. Home opponents include Michigan State, Michigan, and Purdue. Season and single game tickets to see Chicago's Big Ten team are on sale now at nusports.com. This would be sort of the validation of the Trubisky redemption narrative to do this now, there, against them, against the team that punched him in the face and made him look awful. Really would. This is, and this also, as we were discussing with Lawrence Holmes during transition yesterday, Anthony, the Bears are going to look for every single positive, every reason why he's still their guy. Every positive almost means double because they're able to have a little recency effect here. They can only concentrate on what we've just seen. And as Pro Football Focus noted via Twitter, it may obscure the negatives they should be looking at as they contemplate their future at the position.
Yeah, I think that what we've seen in recent weeks is really up until, because I thought I thought he was spectacular the other night. I thought in games leading up to that point where Matt Nagy was talking about he had been playing well for a month leading into then, and I've told you guys a number of times, I thought he's been playing well since the Chargers game. I think that as Matt Nagy has adjusted the way he's called the game, and whether it's been utilizing I formation, whether it's been more constant launch point variance, whether it's been just balancing the run calling with the pass play calling and just having, you know, that ability to keep the defense a bit off balance because you're not this volume passing outfit when that's not what suit your skill set. Then overall, I think they've just been getting what they should be getting out of a quarterback with Mitch's talents. The other night was him in certain moments going beyond the X's and O's and some of the where the folks want to say, oh, they're all 10-yard passes. There's a lot of tight window 10-yard passes being thrown in there, and some against man coverage, some against zone coverage. He was spectacular the other night. Up until that point, I think it was I felt like it was the Chargers game that had been his best game up to that point. Then a couple of weeks ago against Detroit, the Thanksgiving game was to me like just beyond that, just as far as just evaluating, you know, X-ing out when guys are dropping passes or when protection is breaking down in those things, just Mitch playing at his best. I felt like it was the Chargers game, then the Detroit game, and now this game he just played surpasses both of those, where I did think on Sunday night football, or on Thursday night football, where he was spectacular there. To continue that, though, as the opponents continue to get bigger and better, as the games continue to mean more and more, as you're trying to slay the dragon to keep your playoff hopes alive, then yes, this to me is now a point where I feel like the last few weeks is now getting a true evaluation of whether or not within Matt Nagy as the head coach and Mitch as the quarterback, how far can the Bears potentially take him and his skill set, not just whether or not he fits into Nagy's system and the way he would prefer to call the game.
You know, the way you put that makes me think of something I said, you know, Monday when we came back. That I said the Cowboys defense is the best one Matt Nagy has beaten. It's really the best one Nagy and Mitch have beaten together while Mitch was also playing well.
Mm-hmm.
Because they beat the Rams, you know, last year, and that was a really gross and ugly game, and it was won by Matt Nagy's defense and not his offense. That was probably the best since Green Bay last year, and that wasn't a particularly great defense either.
Right.
Good,
yeah,
but not great.
Yeah. And this one is, at this point, good, but not great. You know, when you look at some of the statistics of it, they have excellent individual players. Adrian Amos is playing really well. The passers off the edge is doing some great things. They've been very susceptible to the run. And so I think the urge needs to be resisted to say, hey, let's go out there and prove something at Lambeau by having Mitch sit in the pocket and try to carve him up. You still need to say, let's lead with the ground attack. Let's have David Montgomery have a big imprint. I got to credit Tariq Cohen, even though the rushing yards haven't been huge. I've loved over the last 3 weeks his willingness to get vertical. The urge he had been displaying throughout the entire season up until the last few games to constantly bounce the football, to constantly look for the big play, as opposed to saying, you know what, once I stick my foot in the ground, I'm going to be a one-cut slasher, as opposed to what my dad in high school used to call a sideline back, which is over and over again when you get the ball, you're looking to try to turn the corner running sideways over and over again because you think you're faster than everyone when you're not at the NFL level. And I've really liked some of the runs that Tariq Cohen's had lately. Now, he's still, you know, 5'2", 150, so there's only so much he's going to get out of when you run him between the tackles, but he is effective because there's such a small surface to hit where when he's immediately trying to go north and south, he is effective at finding smaller cracks and crevices and finding ways to fit between where tacklers are trying to collision him as he's working his way through body. So I really think Tariq Cohen's been running the ball a lot better the last few weeks as well. So between Cohen and Montgomery, and there was the carry right away at the start of the Dallas game where David Montgomery, I think it was J.P. Holtz was coming across to try and kick out a defender, and Montgomery kind of hesitated and waited and looked for a spin, and then next thing you knew, there was like multiple defenders around his legs and he didn't go anywhere.
Yeah.
You immediately saw him kind of get up and show a little frustration at himself is what I believe it was, not about the block or anything else.
It hit the hole.
Pretty much every carry from there was him hitting the hole. I've been talking to you guys about that with Montgomery throughout the season. And as the run game has improved, as the willingness to call run plays is enhanced, and as the style of run, which has been since last season and all my Jordan Hart to Howard topics, the style of run plays that they call now suiting the backs as well. And this season, it's more I formation that seems to be suiting them because it sort of forces Montgomery when he's following that lead blocker to stay on a certain path. And everyone is benefiting from it. That has to continue to be the case this weekend.
What do you think of Kevin Pierre-Lewis?
Very impressed, man. I mean, I hadn't seen the guy play a lot of football before the Thursday game. I was so impressed. Not just with every once in a while you get a guy who kind of runs in there And he makes a few plays because he's kind of playing with his hair on fire and he's not quite sure what's happening or anything. But they showed some faith in him because they used him exactly the same way that they utilized Roquan Smith, not just in the box, but in being a blitzer who can affect the opposing quarterback. He ran over Zeke Elliott a couple of times, one where he fully just sat him on top of Dak Prescott in the pocket. They brought him off the edge, where in recent weeks they've begun to bring Roquan Smith into the edge rush package as a part of their dime package. I think I was maybe talking to you guys about that last week.
Yeah, we were talking.
And KPL, they said, all right, go ahead and do it right there. And he seemed to be an even more refined pass rusher than Roquan Smith, who's mainly always been an inside backer. KPL had some nice, like, you know, chop club moves and some dips around the edge where it looks like maybe at a younger age he had played some defensive end, but he certainly showed skill to be able to rush the edge. So if you can get that where perhaps snap by snap, you won't necessarily trust him to just read things in the box, because on one of the big explosive runs that Ezekiel Elliott got was essentially just KPL misfitting, misreading the block, where he came downhill outside into the B gap. Zeke didn't declare in that hole, where sometimes your pre-snap, when you're an inside backer, your pre-snap responsibility won't always be what's actually there that you have to react to once the play is actually run.
When I'm trying to remember the term inside shoulder, it's a hammer technique or spill technique, right? Depending
right.
on choosing the shoulder.
Exactly. Yeah. And there will be times where you're a spill player who's supposed to fit inside the block. In this case where Zeke had the big run, he was more of a force player where he was supposed to fit outside the shoulder of the guard into the B gap, but his defensive tackle sort of got washed out of the hole just a little bit. His D tackle became the B gap player, so KPL should have fit off of him into the A gap. You have to make your lineman right when you're a linebacker, especially when you're playing in the box. So on this particular play, he went more where his pre-snap assignment was. Zeke cuts it back, does a little jump cut. He's off into the secondary, so it became a big run. He didn't make that mistake a lot. So don't have him necessarily be that guy snap by snap, just in case he's not consistently able to read the run from within the box that well. But continue to use the versatility, because they showed some faith in the variety of ways they used him, and he was really effective in a few different ways. He ain't Roquan Smith, but he ain't bad, man. I was impressed.
Let's talk about one Bears defensive lineman in particular. Akeem Hicks was not on the injury report yesterday. That was a little surprising to me.
Yeah.
A little surprising, but he seems to be on his way coming
full
back.
Full practice, whatever.
What is fair to expect from Akeem Hicks? And further, and I think it will help a lot of watchers or viewers here, how should we watch him to find out whether or not he's got it, doesn't have it, or is kind of making do with whatever he does have?
If Akeem Hicks is willing and able to put both his hands into the sternum, into the chest protector of an offensive lineman and violently lock him out, then that's – you can't hope for any more than that. I will be shocked if he's willing and able to do that, though, for the way his left arm was dangling there as his elbow had been separated from the remaining parts of the joint.
He's not ragdolling anybody.
I wouldn't anticipate that he will. It's just it's going to be asking a lot. But it doesn't mean he can't be effective on the field. If he can be a penetration player, if he can be a guy who's more fitting into one gap as opposed to having to try and stack an offensive lineman and then violently shed him to make a play, thus sort of holding that lineman away from the next level. If he can play perhaps more like an Aaron Donald type, where he's mainly focused on penetration, just get through that gap, and you can still eat up multiple blockers by the force you bring into a gap, because they have to account for the penetration at or near the point of attack. And his lower body is just fine. His right arm is just fine. So you can be a penetration player. You can be a guy who's bringing force into a gap and still completely discombobulate the blocking surface that they're trying to get at the point of attack. We know Aaron Jones has become such a huge portion of the Packers offense this season. You can be a big part, if you're Akeem Hicks, of stymieing the running game by doing that when he's in on rundowns. On passing downs, then it's going to be more about perhaps he won't be able to utilize as much two-hand power rushing. Maybe it's more of a stab move, because to be able to use that left arm as a weapon, a, you know, Deacon Jones type of club move that he's really effective
well,
that's
at. That's a head slap.
Right, when you go away, full-on Deacon Jones,
hand.
Yes.
You ever get a chance to shake his hand?
I didn't, no. Reggie White was probably the biggest hand and the Lord. Deepest voice it's that I'd ever shaken.
Deacon Jones, when we sat down with him, that was really special
to
talk to him. His hands, they make Dan Hampton's hands look normal.
Oh, God.
I mean, they're just, they look like a tree in winter.
Okay.
At all a different angles, and there's knuckles that aren't knuckles that are supposed to be. And I, because I shook hands with him, like, man, you, wow, that's a
something from one of the Lord of the Rings movies. Like an ent. Just like that.
Yeah, it's a tree beard. It doesn't. I said that's, and he's like, man, if you made your living slapping helmets, your hand would look like that too.
Fair point.
But okay. I was still in college, and we came out for the coin toss. We were playing at Spartan Stadium against Michigan State, and Hightower. Was out there. Bubba Smith was out there for the coin toss. And I just remember, I didn't know. I wasn't paying attention to who the opponent had as their honorary captain that game or anything. So I go out to midfield for the coin toss. I'm looking at the officials. I got my mean mug on. Spartan Stadium's yelling at us because it's their homecoming. And I start to just sort of mean mug the Spartan players I'm going across. Then suddenly I just see a chest. And I look up. It's Bubba Smith. Like, oh, hey, what's up, Hightower? Like, my demeanor completely changed in the moment where I'm just, like, trying to look like angry guy. Yeah. And then I see Bubba Smith, and I look way up at him. Like, hey, what's up, Hightower? I just completely turn into this giddy little kid.
Why is that man's face a chest?
Yeah, right.
Oh, it's Hightower. Okay.
I love the stories of him, the stories that they tell where he wasn't really concerned who had the ball. He was just going to tackle everybody he could see and then sort them out and find the guy who had the ball. Because his arms, his reach was such that it was like a basketball reach, mm-hmm. and he was just able to kind of rope everybody that he had to go corral everyone before he found the guy with the ball. All right, so gut feeling on this one, as we are in the first round of the Bernstein playoffs here. Do you like the Bears?
I do. Right. I made the comparison of it. This season feels to me like Thor Ragnarok. At least I watched Thor Ragnarok over
here
the
we
weekend.
Go. Terrific. Here we go. You're playing your audience here.
KYP.
It felt to me like, well, I was watching Thor Ragnarok and I'm going through the movie and I'm seeing Thor kind of come into the top of the film. He's got all the bravado in the world. He's got his little catchphrases, and we've seen him for several films up to this point as the hero and the guy wielding his hammer around and everything else. And then shortly into the movie, we figure out, oh, well, Odin has been lying to Thor. And Odin perhaps wasn't exactly the guy who we thought he was. Odin had some faults. And so now once Thor figures out there's faults, Thor's uncertain about himself and what that means and, you know, what's going to become of him and Loki and what's going to become of his realm that he needs to rule. And as the movie ensues and you're finding out that Thor isn't exactly who he thought he was, but he needs to work his way through that. And by the end of the film, where Hela, this more powerful version of him, essentially his older sister, now here's Hela just coming, just knocking everybody to hell. But then by the end of it, where he never really becomes more powerful than Hela, but what he ends up doing by the end of the movie is recognizing that, you know what? It doesn't matter where they're saying our home is, as long as we recognize there's a future with me, with my people, wherever we call home, as long as we're together, we're going to get this thing done. And that, to me, encapsulates what the Bears season is on the track to become. Somebody else can destroy your homeland. As long as you got yourself, you got your teammates, the Bears got those guys in the locker room, and they're starting to feel their oats, and their leader, their Odin, is starting to figure out, you know what? I don't have to be that other guy. I can be this modern, this current version of myself, whether that's eye formation and bootlegs and all these other things I don't usually do. That's cool, as long as it works for my guys.
Hey, nobody does it like that. You're not going to get that anywhere
that works.
Else. Nope, not going to get that anywhere else. Anthony?
Freaking superb. Standing.
Superb.
Great stuff, Anthony Herron. You can hear Anthony Herron on the post show on Sunday after Bears and Packers. We are going to do transition shortly with Lawrence Holmes on the Score.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.